now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is an old pal of mine, one of the original Dragon Slayers from back in the day. And in our ranks in those days, we had people like Wes Penra. We had people like Evie Lorgan, Tom Montauk, Wyo, and a bunch of other people. And we had our own little internet forum group back in the day. We're talking like the early mid-90s.
Oh, James.
Yeah, those were the good old days. And then so now I've had Neil on the show before. We'll have all of Neil's website and talk show information because he's also got his own podcast. So without any further ado, Neil Cruz in the heart of the Socialist Plantation, California. How are you, my friend?
Very good, James. Thank you so much. And it's so good to see you again. You know, James was talking about our past together, and I always like to tell a little quick story. James is very important to me because I had been attacked by a specific entity. I don't know when it was, 98, 99, James, it was way back, and nobody could deal with it. And I began to sink into a darker and darker place. James, my friends were saying, you're just not the same anymore. You're weird. And then one of them said, why are you wearing black all the time, you know? And so I realized that something about me had changed. I was given clues through the TV and prayers. Then I started to talk to psychologists and so on, and they're like, this is not, you know, this is not ordinary, you know, demonic possession. This is not ordinary. I don't know what this is. I can't deal with it. And one day I read this piece of writing on the internet by this guy called James Bartley. I mean, James, this is where it all happened for me. This is where the whole thing happened. I read that article, and inside I said, this guy knows what I'm going through. I don't know how, but I know he does. And I emailed James, and he said, Neil, I got to tell you what's going on here, buddy. This is going to take the top of your head off. And then James was kind enough to say, hey, there's a bunch of us around. Would you like to maybe sit in for a little bit since you're a newbie? Don't say too much because it'll just mess with the program, but hang out. And so I owe James a great deal of gratitude. I feel that he pulled me out of a very, and that started the whole thing for me, James. And I'm so glad I was brought in by a bunch of people who knew the alien story, because that's the hardest one to believe. And it's the most important one if you're going to get the whole story, you know. So thank you very much. And that was the beginning of me opening up for the final time. I had opened up to conspiracy research at various times of my life in my early teens. And two or three episodes later on, the people around me immediately talked me out of it. You got to give up all this stuff. It's bad for you. You're not making any money. But in 1998, 99, when James and the group brought me in, I told everybody, that's it. You can be my friend or not, but I am never leaving this from this point on. And so it's been, where are we at, James? This is 2020. So it's been more than 20 years since you guys welcomed me in.
Yeah, and we knew a kindred spirit, a fellow spiritual warrior, when we meet one. And clearly what was going on with you, see, I tend to look at things in opposites, Neil. If you were being subjected to that level of spiritual warfare attack, there must have been something about you that pissed off these archontic forces. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. And, tell us a bit about what you've been doing lately, because, folks, Neil has had to walk a fine line. And I understand this. A lot of us understand this in our field. When we meet someone on the street or we have a casual acquaintance, and if they seem somewhat open to real information, advice, misinformation from the mainstream narrative, we can plant little seeds, drop little hints, make, you know, certain allusions here and there, references, but we're careful about not wanting to blow them out of the water because, as Neil just mentioned earlier, this goes very deep and the origins of all this is non-human, as many of my listeners and viewers know. So Neil has had to conduct himself in such a way. He's had his own podcast for many years, but in the recent past, if it's okay to talk about it, you don't have to get specific about the name of the show or anything, but you have a show now where you're informing people that are tired of the mainstream narrative. They want a little bit more, but you kind of have to ease them into, you know, at least the surface level of what's going on.
Yeah, it's I got on the air not as a show exploring these topics, James, but with a partner, and we started out talking about green architecture. My partner is a brilliant world leader in the field of architecture and energy savings, and this was our subject for 2 years, okay? And on a radio station here in on the west coast of California, 1460 AM, for anybody who wants to listen, you can listen to it on iHeart app. And my show is at 11 AM on Saturday mornings, that specific standard time. And after 2 years, he said, you know, Neil, this every Saturday thing is killing me. I really can't hold to the schedule. And so I even considered at the time just walking away from it, but I got a kind of inner tug to keep going. And the producer said it was fine with him if I did, had to work out some financing to pay for it. And I kept going. And that was about 5 years ago. So it's been 4 or 5 years since the time that I changed the show to this format. And, you know, James, there were many times I was not going to talk about some subjects because it scared me to present them to a general audience. You know, this is a county in this Monterey County area, and we have a lot of very important people in this area. The Panettas live a small distance away from me here. The Carmel area, the Pebble Beach area. Pebble Beach is where many famous people have lived. You know, you've got the whole Clint Eastwood story. We've got many of the Hollywood people use this area as a second home. Saul Alinsky lived in Pebble Beach, right? So this is a real hotbed. And then, of course, James, military intelligence, dude. This is something you know a lot about. We have the Naval Postgraduate School. We have the Army Language Schools. We have Middlebury International School. This is a hotbed for UN activity and everything. So I have a sort of a general rule, which is not to talk about what's going on in your own backyard, you know.
I understand that entirely. There's some things that are too close to some things that are too close to home. You're better off keeping that at arm's length and speaking in generalities. But please continue.
Right, and there are some. I happen to feel, James, that there is a lot of really, really good people in military intelligence right now, working for the good guys. And I don't know how you feel about the whole Trump and Q thing. It's been a real hard one to keep track of and to understand the motivations and who's doing what and so on and so forth. But I still believe that there is a very big segment somewhere in military intelligence that is trying to turn this whole thing around. And so I, in a sense, I feel that many of those guys might be right here in our area. And I don't want to cause any problems. I'm not going to be an activist, and I'm not going to start, you know, instigating marches and so on. I'm interested in the search for truth, simple truth. James, I don't need to get people signing petitions or start movements or everything, but what I do want to talk about is what is real and what isn't. And as you know, James, when we, you know, you guys took me in, and there I am hearing all about reptilians, and you guys are getting abducted by them, and you're doing battle in these situations with these guys. I remember one time Weo even invited me, and she said, I'm emailing with a reptilian guy. You want to join in? And I'm like, no. And she said, you really should, Neil. So she, you know, I'm exchanging emails with this guy who claims he's a reptilian. But that whole thing was necessary to open me up to the widest possible understanding of what is going on in our reality. And so I call the normal reality, or the matrix, I call it the Truman Show. I'm looking for a, have you seen the Truman Show, the movie, James?
Yes, I have.
I'm looking for a metaphor or an analogy that I can give to my listeners that says this is where most of us live. We live in a little ant house that they've prepared for us. They've decorated us. They put all the actors in there. We think it's the real thing. We think it's just natural. We have no second thoughts about it. And then one of these days, a odd light falls out of the sky and hits the road. And there's Jim Carrey looking at this thing and looking up and saying, huh? And his friend comes along. Oh, that fell out of an airplane. Don't worry. And these things keep happening. And finally, James begins to wake up. You know, Truman, he begins to say, hey, those people on those bicycles, every 13 minutes, they circle in front of my house. Look, watch. And he starts to show his wife. She distracts him. He walks into what's supposed to be an elevator, but it's a table full of pastries and coffee for all the actors. And so in his mind, he begins to say, something isn't right here. This place is not for real. And I show this to my listeners, and I use this as a metaphor to say, this is what we all are going to go through right now. In the past, you would have people talk about the things that we talk about, James, and they could sit there comfortably knowing that after a year or 2 years, it's not going to be on the mainstream. We're going to go away. And then they can go back to thinking that, oh, none of that was real. And whatever those guys were talking about, it's just more of that woo-woo stuff that has nothing to do with how the world really works. Those guys are off or they're mentally deranged. And what I'm saying to my listeners now is that this time is different. This time you may not have the choice to stay in the Truman Show, because I think all this stuff is going to be put out in the open in a way that it becomes undeniable. Now, James, I worry about something else, which is, in my own mind, I go back to you guys when you brought me in, keeping in mind I had already done my own research years before on many different levels. But when you guys hit me, this was the whole, you know, the whole thing, the whole enchilada. It took me years to adjust to some of the things you told me. You know, hey, Neil, there's a whole group of Satanists that are running things in the background. There's these dark rituals that take place. A lot of the alien stuff comes out in these rituals. People call up these demons, and they're not demons. They're working with various different alien groups and stuff. I couldn't get used to that right away. It took me months of hearing it. You know, this makes no sense. Why doesn't CNN tell us about this? Why aren't they telling us about this in college? If it's real, they must know about it. We have to have some evidence for all of this stuff in the outer world, and there's none. And so you go back and forth in your brain. How is it possible, James? How is it possible for there to be real aliens, for me to be talking to people that are physically confronting these creatures and are doing hellish things to them? And at the same time, the entire world's media system and educational system won't even mention it. This to me was, I think this is the stretch that you go through. And it's like the first part of it is really hard. It's very difficult. It's the kind of thing that keeps you awake at night, James. I remember one time you and I shared a phone call, and you were telling me some stuff about the reptilians, right? And I had a really bizarre dream that night. And I emailed you, and I said, wow, I had this dream. And you said, did they do this? And I said, yeah. And did they do that? And you said, yeah. So you said to me, Neil, that's because you were talking to me about the reptilians, and they sent you this dream because, you know, they don't like us talking about this stuff. So as soon as I'm talking to you about it, then they come into my world, you know. And so now it gets real. Now it gets not only real, but it gets scary. Then I had to go through the whole transformation of the New Age belief system. That took me 3 to 4 years. Well, now, James, all this stuff is, in my opinion, I suppose they're going to try and shut it down. I think it's all going to come out now. And so my concern is what people are going to go through when this stuff becomes unavoidable. Now, you're still working with people on a personal basis, I have to guess, right? People that are going through these things. Are you finding a greater awareness of this out there in the public, of the reptilian situation, of the abduction situation?
What I'm finding, before I answer that question, I'll talk a bit about people that at least have a surface level understanding of what's going on, and or a surface level understanding of what's going on, and perhaps overlay on top of that their own ET experiences, their own metaphysical spiritual warfare type experiences. What the COVID-19 pandemic has done is, I don't want to sound presumptuous or elitist when I say this, so please, folks, don't misunderstand what I'm going to say. Don't hear what I didn't say, because kind of words fail me. Then sometimes it's easier to try to explain something telepathically, if you have the means to do so, than through the means of verbal speaking, because it's so limited. But for lack of a better term, you see the limitations that some people have as far as an understanding about what's going on. Because the way the pandemic was rolled out, that's threatening to a lot of people. And then all the measures, the restrictions. Now, these were people, I've been looking at their posts for years on Facebook. They seemed pretty switched on. They're aware of the greater global agenda. They're aware of the Luciferian aspects. They're aware of the ET aspects, the globalist aspects. But what's happened with COVID-19, so-called, is when presented with this bullfrog's chorus of impending doom and impending annihilation of the whole surface population of the planet, they were confronted with their own mortality, Neil. And many of them, whether it's because there was some deep-seated plug-in from the past, which they hadn't entirely pulled out by its roots, or as a means to seek to regain control, because all around them, but look what they did to us, Neil. You know, we like to think of ourselves as civilized, hygienic beings. Where's the toilet paper? I mean, plumbers were telling me that here in the region where I live, there were like myriad toilet plumbing sewage problems because people were flushing like baby wipes down the drain. They were flushing, you know, like tissue paper down the drain, because we were all terrified into thinking there was not going to be any toilet paper. To me, it's clear what happened. They cleared the shelves of them, created this meme of panic buying, et cetera, et cetera. So when things hit us that close to home, and then the fear meme is just pushed over and over and over, social distancing, mask, the shaming of those who don't wear masks, the shaming of those who don't adhere to social distancing, the shaming of those who want to go out and enjoy the sunlight. I think what happened with all this, Neil, is it brought out these innate, latent vulnerabilities that people have. And so rather than question the narrative, they say, you know what, I'm just going to go along with these restrictions. I'm going to go ahead and believe all this stuff is going on. Now, for what it's worth, I've said this before, I think there is something out there, some kind of bioweapon that may be ethnic in origin, that targets the Iranians, that targets the Chinese. But I think that because it is the coronavirus, and there's several strains of it, and we all have strains of it within us, right? And now they're labeling every death, even George Floyd, the alleged death of George Floyd, in part is due to the coronavirus. That's how ridiculous the whole thing has gotten. But the point I'm making, Neil, is what I've observed since this pandemic came out is, and I don't want to, again, I'm using the term limitations, but I don't mean that in an elitist sense, like I know better than them. It just that it tells you that everyone has a ceiling. I know where my wisdom ends and my ignorance begins. but because of the fear meme that was put out, even people who I feel should have known better have gone right along with these restrictions, gone right along with the social distancing, went right along with arguing with people and shaming them, trying to shame them back into line. And that's taken on another level entirely with the advent of the Antifa communist revolution rollout, which we knew was going to happen all along. For those of us who study the communist playbook, and you and I were talking about this before we came on, Neil, the Helter Skelter scenario by Charles Manson, which we'll get into, et cetera, et cetera. And what's astonishing to me is some of these people that buy into the whole BLM, Black Lives Matter, white privilege thing, some of these people are extraordinarily knowledgeable about some hardcore stuff. So there seems to be kind of, what is it, cognitive dissonance? What is it? It's blinders? What is it?
Yeah.
Filters? But they know about certain things which the mainstream doesn't know about, and they know like quite a lot of it. But when it comes to this, the pandemic, and then on top of that, the socialist communist meltdown we're seeing, it's really, as intended, created artificial fault lines, more atomization, more fragmentation. So we're seeing fragmentation again, Neil. We're seeing atomization, that term that you like to use. We're seeing fault lines created out of nowhere, where people that I thought, at least on a surface level, and some of them delving into the ET level, the cryptozoology level, the esoterica level, man, the amount of chaos and infighting that this is all kicked off from people I thought that should know better, right? Okay, now keep that point in mind. Now I'll answer your question about the mainstream. We have to remember, and we talked about this in the past, the mainstream, they're severely traumatized. It's collectively, however many past lives some of them have had, some of them have lived through celestially driven cataclysms, plagues, Mongol invasions, Hunnic invasions, whatever the case may be. So they were traumatized even before they were hatched this time around. And now, and I'm just speaking from an Australian perspective, we had the brush fires. It got so bad where we lived, we spent the night in an expensive hotel because it was the only place we could find that was near the water, that was in a built-up area, that was away from bushland. And after the smoke from the brush fires dissipated, you should have seen how smoky it got.
And then, it was like the whole continent was covered.
It was the whole continent, and that's the impression that the media was giving too, right? And then we were hit by these storms and floods on the heels of that. And now a lot of the underbrush has been burned away. So now flooding ensues, power outages. And then we had just barely recovered from that. Then whammo, COVID-19 or coronavirus or whatever it is. Just one trauma after another, to the point where people just want to roll over and say, Uncle, Big Daddy, government, take care of us because we're incapable of taking care of ourselves. And so when they lash out at others for not maintaining their social distancing, when they lash out at others for not wearing a mask, that's their feeble attempt at regaining control, Neil. So I see that part of the dynamic. And then you throw in aspects like lack of toilet paper for a time. I went to Kmart the other day. The shelves are half empty. And I made a joke. I said, well, they must be waiting for another shipment from Wuhan, you know, to restock these shelves, right? So they're getting us accustomed to Soviet-style scarcity, Soviet-style queuing up, Soviet-style snitching on one another, because they've shunted us, and you talked about it, my brilliant friend, they've shunted us into the reptilian mind of fear. And,
there you go.
And in particular, the victim-aggressor mentality, which I speak about a lot, right? The victimology, the victim identity politics, we're all victims, white guilt, Black Lives Matter, all of that stuff plays into this. So I don't know if I answered your question, Neil, but the what I would do for people, I don't want to write some people off as hopeless lost causes, but just listening to some of these people, a lot of these people, I just choose to keep it on a very mundane level to the point of even agreeing with some of their narratives. Because what I like to do, Neil, it's part of my Scorpio Dragon mindset. I kind of like to blend in when I'm not doing podcasts, you know, and just seem like I'm like everyone else. When I come across, when I come across someone who's asking serious questions, I start to plant a few seeds here and there, right? And I determine, well, do you like to read books? Are you a book reader, right? And then kind of direct them to certain books, direct them to certain websites, let them do their own investigation, and let them figure it out for themselves. And one quick point, and then I'll turn it back to you, because you're the focus of our discussion here. You remember a time, Neil, when someone, anyone, was confronted with, new information they hadn't heard from the schools, from their peer groups, from their family. Usually the normal reaction from people, even if it was somewhat confronting information, was curiosity, which is a very basic human survival trait, is curiosity. It's the basis for, you know, endurance, the basis for survival. It's just curiosity. You have to explore your surroundings, do a recon, get an understanding, situational awareness, curiosity. Nowadays, because of this long-term cultural Marxist programming in the schools, the Hollywood Illuminati programming, et cetera, whereas in the past, when provided with not even confronting information, just any kind of information, which they haven't been indoctrinated with, rather than curiosity, the typical response is defensiveness, even outright hostility, because the way the communist agitation propaganda indoctrination works is it's all victimization. It's all victim identity politics. Everything has to be reduced to this base emotional reptilian primal rage point and shriek level. So you fast forward to today, that's what we see. Lenin called them useful idiots. Useful idiots are non-communists who go along with this communist agenda unwittingly, thinking that it will better their circumstances. So there seems to, it's a force multiplier, Neil. There's more and more of them. Now they're trending where, you know, shave your head to show solidarity with Black Lives Matter. Kneel down in order to, show solidarity. Wear a mask and then do all this weird cultic stuff right out of Eyes Wide Shut territory, Neil. So to answer your question, I'm very much like a recruiter for an intelligence agency in that I sound people out. And if I decide, well, this person is basically a no-hoper, to put it bluntly, I'll just keep it at a very basic, mundane level. If someone is somewhat switched on, I'll get out of them their level of interest, level of understanding, what their ouch factor is, where if you bring up certain subjects like ouch, then you know to back off, right? And then those people are ones you may be able to work with. So anyhow, it's a rather long explanation, but please, I'd like your thoughts on that. And then go anywhere direction you want to go, Neil.
Thanks for that, James. That was wonderful. And again, I see how those of us that are looking at the bigger world so often have a very similar realization about what's taking place. I have a phrase that I use for Marxism, and I say that the psychological formula for Marxism is blame, shame, guilt, and victimhood. And the victimhood, which you mentioned, it creates a race to the bottom in your country. Whereas capitalism, not usury capitalism, which is what we have, but real capital, where you are rewarded for your efforts, causes the race to the top. Everyone wants to do better, be better, achieve more, become faster, become better. And with the victimization of the Marxist movement, you totally reverse that direction. And now everybody's trying to be the worst, the most damaged, the most bruised, the most hurt. And they're you know, they're angry when somebody gets in front of them on that victim routine. And so then the guilt, you see, there was the video of a man who confronts a white woman on the sidewalk and says, you should kneel down to show your feeling, you know, your apology to the African-American race. And she does. And she kneels down. Now there's whole cults of people that are sitting together in groups and confessing their guilt to the African-American race. And I remember in Germany, they have a program. All the kids in all the schools, this is from Michael Moore in his special, at a very young age are told about the Holocaust and made to feel it is their guilt. They did it. You did it. You are responsible. And so you have these very young children. I remember specifically an African-American kid in Germany saying, well, I see now that I'm responsible for this. I'm a bad person because this happened. So when the guilt thing then lowers our consciousness, lowers our self-esteem. We become easier to manipulate, easier to control. Shame is obvious. A good example of shame is the shaming of men. Men are bad. Men are independent. Men are too willful. Men are too aggressive. Men are the source of all the violence in the world. Everything bad in the world, the shame that is heaped on the white race, you know.
A male baby is a future rapist.
There you go. It's just it's just right out of the box. We're bad just by virtue of being that type of a person or entity. So Marxism it's basically a psychological formula for subverting a race of people, you know. And what you're pointing at, which is so good, is we're now seeing it in its most manifest form in this country. And I believe now, switching a little bit into the Helter Skelter movement, which is what I believe this is now, this is the go time. This is the time where they say, okay, we have to now push in a very narrow of window of time. We have to set off every alarm bell we've got. We've got to put every false flag in motion. We've got to put every trick we have. They call up all their false opposition, their controlled opposition, which is a big thing for me, James. There are so many people in the research community that people think are true blue, that are pretenders. They're actors in the Truman Show. It's the guy at the gas station. He's not a gas station attendant. He's an actor. But he's talking to, you know, Truman, and he's telling him things to make him see certain things and believe certain things. And a lot of people in the alternative research community are those kinds of people. But people believe them because they think that they're true, or they're the ones telling the truth. So the subversion is way up the ladder now. And so even in the research community, people are coming to me with, well, do you know what such and so said? Oh, my God. And I'm saying, well, wait a second. This is his moment. Somebody called him. You got to turn. You got to do it now. Alex Jones saying, yeah, I think it's time we did a whole show on all of our concerns with Donald Trump. Trinity on Godlike Productions always puts the doubting Trump forum messages at the very top of the forum. So everybody thinks that Godlike Productions is really an alternative research forum. But Trinity is controlled opposition. And he makes sure the messages that create doubt in Trump are always at the top of the forum.
Yes, and I'm not, you know, a Trump faithful. I'm not a Trump hater. Although there are some things, being a Gemini, he's going to flip-flop, go back and forth. He must drive, you know, even a Zionist handler is crazy sometimes with some of the things he do, because with him, at least, every once in a while, it seems like the ball bounces in our direction once in a while, right?
Right.
At least once in a while, the pronouncements he makes and the Twitter comments he makes, right? And see,
yes,
very quickly, that's the basic difference between, and I'm a recovering Republican, so I'm qualified to say these things, that at least from your mainline Republican standpoint, there are basic core values. Second Amendment. Well, this is why we have a Second Amendment. So these freaks won't surround our cars and threaten us when we just want to go to the store, right? And we won't get assaulted for not wearing a mask and all this other stuff and get assaulted by security forces and also, you know, basic things like limited government, get out of foreign entanglement. We have very basic core elements, or Republicans do. They may not be aware of all this other stuff that people like you and I are. They don't have to be, Neil. if someone's like a Christian-based spiritual warrior, Republican, conservative, that's fine. Because you know what? I'd rather walk side by side with them than some flaky New Age la-di-da who's saying, oh, this isn't part of my reality. I'm tuning it all out, right?
Right.
Oh, by the way, you're getting too close to me, right?
So, some of my favorite people are Christian researchers.
Me
James.
Too. Some of my favorites, some of the most knowledgeable for what they do, especially picking apart the communist socialist agenda. They're some of the best. But to quickly just add on to a point that you made, Neil, a guy that I admired for a long time, he's flipped too. Like Wayne Madsen. I used to read his articles all the time because he's an ex-intelligence guy. And he wrote a lot of very insightful articles. At first, he wasn't on board with the inside 9/11 aspect because some of his earlier works were, Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden based, so to speak. Then later on, he started seemingly catching on to the fact that, yes, 9/11 was an inside job. But now he's coming out with these articles written almost in a debunking kind of like a hectoring tone to anyone who questions the plandemic coronavirus narrative is like a whack job, conspiracy theorist type. And it's like, wow. It's like he goes from writing these hardcore articles, even to the point of writing about Trump and his connections to Epstein and allegations from the past where Trump supposedly anally raped a minor girl that was part of, she was a Puerto Rican girl that was pulled into a sex ring. Going from there, and suddenly he's writing articles being dismissive of anyone who questions the COVID-19 pandemic narrative. It's like that's a major flip that's been switched, Neil. But please continue your point.
Well, this is the thing. I know this subject is not really interesting to people, controlled opposition. But James, I think it is one of the main points of why I have not been pulled into so many of these. I don't know where you're at with the flat earth theory. I think it's bunk. But I happen to think that a lot of these.
I do too.
Oh, thank God. I'm almost afraid to say that because some really serious people believe in it. They push these things out there, James, for us to swallow. And then when we're being used by somebody as an evidence or as an authority or as an expert, somebody's going to call in and say, is it true you believe in the flat earth theory? And you're going to say, yes, as a matter of fact, and you're done. You're toast. They're going to hang up. He's obviously a whack job because we know the earth isn't flat. They feed these things to us in the research community to poison us. So when we come back to the normal community, an example of that was we had Juan O'Savin, and he was reporting on McAllister, and he was talking to Field McConnell, and he was saying, I'm JFK Jr. And this went on for months, and I'm talking about it to my listeners. And then one of the researchers says, hey, there's research that says that's not JFK Jr. That's a guy by the name of Wayne Willott, W-I-L-L-O-T, Wayne R. Willott. So we went to work, we researched it, we matched the voice, true enough. So here comes a guy, he pretends to be. There's this window, right, of is JFK Jr. alive or not? Well, this guy uses that window, steps in and says, I'm him, right?
There was a meme going around, Neil, where JFK Jr. would like come back from the dead as some kind of a messiah, savior type figure to like lead this counter-revolution, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Well, I still believe he didn't die. But the fact is, because I told everybody he was Juan O'Savin, I had to go on my show and say, I got took. I got fooled. And so there's so many of it. I compare it to a minefield. When you're a researcher, James, we live in a completely different world than most people. It's so hard to explain, but there are people who call me and talk to me, and people that were new to the show, and they would say, Neil, nobody even knows that I am this way. So me coming to you and talking is me coming out. and saying, I think like you do, and I have for a long time, but I don't dare let my family know. I have to do it in the quiet hours of the late evening. There are people, James, talking to me on the phone, but their mate is a normal, you know? And they'll say, oh, Neil, I got to go. They're coming in the door. I got to go. They shouldn't hear me talking to you. I have people all the time that say,
the agent Smiths are coming through the door. I call them abnormies now, but that's just me.
Well, there's normies, abnormies, the normals. You know, in the Harry Potter thing, they called them the muggles, you know, the people who don't believe in magic. But, and I don't want these terms to put people down or make people who don't believe this stuff wrong. I think what we're trying to get at a little bit here is the difference between these two worlds and what people go through that are not part of the mainstream world. They have a hard life. Many of them have professed to me their whole family has estranged them.
Yeah, you know? So I've never seen it. Well,
their whole family.
Of course, none of us in this lifetime has seen this level of insanity coming, you know, the cascading insanity, getting bigger and bigger like a tsunami wave. I'm seeing on my Facebook wall, people are saying over and over now, different people. I've had to unfriend, you know, friends, I had to block friends, you know, family has unfriended me, blocked me, all this stuff because the fear thing, right? Oh, well, no, I don't buy into this narrative. I'm, you know, well, what's wrong with going out and going to get a coffee and sitting at a cafe and then you're dealing with all these foaming at the mouth, fear-crazed family members, right? So we're seeing more and more of that. And then on top of that came this whole George Floyd kneeling down submission thing. So it's crazy. And a point I wanted to make, and I'd like your thoughts on it, Neil, is if there's going to be serious inroads into stopping this communist socialist uprising, and the problem is, Neil, as you know, it's so embedded. So many of these governors, so many of these mayors, down to the local levels, are imbued with this control-freak, communist, socialist mentality.
Right down to the city councils, James.
Right down to the city councils. And so many of the cops, because they've been recruiting the Israeli model of police militarization, the millions of dollars, and so many universities. And also they use the multiphasic psychology evals to determine, well, who amongst these wannabe cops are psychos and lunatics and whatnot, and we'll recruit them. So the problem that I see is, so many of these cops are not, it's not that they're on the take in a Serpico fashion, that they were already corrupt to begin with. It's just that they're psychopaths, and they're tools of this control system. So whatever is going to happen, because we're seeing videos of cops securing an area, torching and vandalizing their own vehicles, which are just really just props, right? They're taxpayer funded anyway. We're seeing all these bricks pre-deployed set up all over the place. So clearly there's in so many of these police departments and sheriff's departments, even though there may be people within these police departments and sheriff's departments that have a constitutionalist mindset, we've seen in the recent past a couple of cops come forward saying they don't like what they see is going on. They're combat veterans. This is not, you know, what they signed up for. They've been fired. So, and I can see over time, they're going to sniff out people with that kind of a mindset, a constitutionalist kind of mindset, and by hook and crook, they're going to get rid of them. They're going to kill them off, blame it on white supremacists or whatever the case may be. Point being is that that's a major hurdle that whoever is going to try to turn this thing around at the grassroots level, from the mayors all the way up to the governors, the state legislatures, et cetera, there are so many hardened communist, hardened control freaks, Luciferians, And it's easy to blame it all on Soros. Oh, Soros, this or yeah, he's the money bags. And this is what he does. He goes country to country and instigates these color revolutions.
Specialty.
It's a divide and conquer. But from a grassroots level, being there in the middle of a Democratic plantation, Neil, it's how do you see them dealing with this, turning this thing around?
Well, I think that there is a general awakening taking place. And I find this in my friends, people who talk to me because of the show or people that I've known for a long time. And they talk about their friends and that more and more of them are coming to them and asking questions. And they're worried. And this isn't making sense. I feel and I see the evidence for an opening up of the minds of people along the basis of a whole lot of this stuff is no longer making sense to them. It's incongruous. It's extremely frightening. They want to know if there is something else going on to this. And I think that, the fear locks us into the reptilian mind, which shuts down logic and thinking and discourse, so you can't have a rational discussion. All you got is fear. But I think the other side of that fear equation is, what is going on? Why is this happening in a free country? In the United States of, I mean, what is it? Why is, and
the
also,
small infinitesimal number of actual deaths from this alleged virus.
There you go.
They justify destroying the whole economy. You know, a guy fishing on his own in a deserted lake somewhere, in a remote lake. Oh, no, they're going to send drones and helicopters after that guy. But, oh, yeah, you know, just protests and everything else. Oh, no, that's good. Like I said before we started, the police chief in Adelaide, a city in South Australia, they eased the social distancing outdoor restrictions in order to placate Black Lives Matter, right? So everyone else, oh, no, you stay inside. You got your 2 hours or 1 hour outdoors. Oh, wait a minute. You know, Black Lives Matter. I didn't know there were that many African Americans in Australia, Neil. You know, I went to the David Icke lecture a few years ago in Sydney. Black Lives Matter was protesting outside. I was like, what the WTF? You know what I mean? But it's selective. It's very selective. Oh, no, you got to stay home, maintain your social distancing. Oh, BLM. Go ahead. Knock yourselves out.
Did they make a special determination saying that the protesters are not required to do social distancing and masks in your area?
I mean, I'm going to have to watch the video for that come out because we talk also, I know we're jumping all over the place, but there's so much going on. There's the Million Man March that's going to be happening in D.C. pretty soon. And I'd like also your thoughts about that before we take a break here because, folks, we're just getting started. We're going to delve into the hardcore E.T. stuff in the second segment and in future shows. But please, Neil, you got the floor.
Well, you have a mention. I just checked the Wall Street Journal. They talked about it. There's a call for a million-person march in Washington, D.C. this weekend. In addition to that, there is some stuff that was sent to me by some of the other researchers saying that there are huge changes taking place that we know nothing about. Something about Donald Trump maybe going into Air Force One through the entire weekend. There was a mention that the mayor of D.C. was evicting the National Guard from D.C., and in this case, it was the Utah National Guard that had been sent there, 1,200 of them. He's sending them all home. We now have, it was nothing more than a statement on Godlike Productions Forum. I think I read that to you, James, where what they're saying is that the military is totally ignoring and countering Donald Trump's efforts to use the military to calm the situation down. They're disallowing Donald Trump to use the military in Washington, D.C. And this apparently is his own general. Mark Espy came out and said, I think this is way overkill for the situation that we have now. This does not call for the military. So they are literally blocking every single move that Trump makes right now. And I mean every single one. As soon as he does something, within minutes, there's some form of a pronouncement by one of his own, or somebody else comes on and says, we're not going to do that. So it seems as though Trump has no power, okay, is the way that it looks. So now you have this million-person march on Washington, D.C. This is the, you know, well, I guess in the second part, we should get into the background of the Helter Skelter movement, because this was planned decades ago. So was the pandemic, James. We had Ole Domegaard, who is the master of false flags, explain that the pandemic was to be preceded by a 39-event terrorist movement in Europe. All of this to take place in a 10-day window in October and the first part of November. 39 terrorist events take place across Europe. He stopped that movement. He put it out all over the internet. We were some of the people that we got this from Ole. He says, tell everybody. We sent it to everybody. They sent it to everybody. So he had hundreds of thousands of people announcing this 39-event terrorist mayhem that was going to take place in Europe. And they canceled it. He knows because somebody who was part of it told him that later on and told him what happened as a result of what he did. But those 39 terrorist events were meant to go off, and then all of the nation's military that had gathered in China for a, you know, celebration, I forget what you call it. They had military from what, 100 nations that were gathered in Wuhan, China. The deal was, those 39 terrorist events go off. Some of them were designed to create famine in Europe. Famine's part of the Helter Skelter program. People, if you want to know Helter Skelter, watch the Purge movies. That'll give you the best graphic feel for what is intended with the Helter Skelter movement. So what happens in this process is that those 39 terrorist events would be so bad, all of the military that were gathered in Wuhan, China, would be immediately called home, and they would all be infected. And now the pandemic would be immediately spread throughout the world by all of those military gathered in China who would immediately have to go home. But because Ole Domegaard and friends stopped the 39-event terrorist plan for the country of Europe, the program did not go as planned. They lost their momentum. And so what we're seeing now, this is all one program, James, and it's being crippled as it goes forward. So the whole October scenario was you have the 39 terrorist events, they go off, then that causes all of the military in Wuhan, China to go home. That causes a huge and massive spread of the pandemic in every country around the world. And then they get to the point where they run the Helter Skelter program. So here you are, James, you're defining the psychological effects of shelter in place, right? People see it as defending themselves from a disease. You're showing it to us as a behavioral program, as a behavioral ritual training program for the masses. Do whatever you're told. Stop thinking. Do what you are told. Put on your mask. Stand upside down. Scratch your butt. Run over there and say six three times in a row. Don't think anymore. Just do what we tell you to do. So there's the psychological program that the pandemic brings in. Compliance. We're scared to death. Now they run the Helter Skelter program, which they're doing right now, which is everything goes crazy. It destroy everything. You get the prisoners out of jail. They've been trained. This is the Manson program out of the Helter Skelter. John Todd talked about this. So the many prisoners in the United States were released, a lot of them in California, but they were notified. They were organized by the Manson groups. So they had to be free now because they are now participating in the riots. They're participating in the violence. They're part of the Antifa gangs, you know. So You get the first phase, which is the pandemic, wear your mask, do what you're told. Now you get the fear program. Oh my God, they're tearing everything apart. What's the next step? I don't care who you are. Please take control. I will give you my soul. I will give you my money. I will give you my spirit. I don't care anymore. I'm so afraid. Please just take control and stop the violence. And so then they're going to say, okay, Well, then you got to give up your free will. Then you got to give up your democracy. Then you got to give up doing whatever you want. Because if you want to keep all that stuff, we're not going to help you. And it's all going to go away.
Yes. And, also, just to interject really quick, deal, if people forget, there's supposed to be an election coming up before too long, right? Whether it's canceled. I did a recent commentary about how the Israeli elite NSA, it's called Unit 8200, they gamed out using computer simulations and everything else, how they can disrupt the elections. Everything from taking over city buses remotely, because it's the Internet of Things, as you know, it's already rolled out, right? Along with all the 5G that's rolling out. So taking over city buses, running over crowds of people at the polling stations, mucking around with the traffic lights, causing all kinds of accidents, terrorism, so on and so forth. Long story short, Neil, just as Gates and company had their simulations about the plandemic last year, the Israelis did this simulation of how they can stop the upcoming presidential election in its tracks. So the point of relevance is the notion of canceling the election through creating chaos, the helter-skelter scenario, is well embedded in the thinking and the strategies of these forces at work here, right? So, you know, people need to keep that in mind, that we're just assuming there may be an election. And even if there is an election and they wind up working it out so the Democratic plantation wins, automatically the first thing that they will do is institute gun control. And then if we don't have or try to institute gun control, and if we don't have a civil war yet by then, we will at that point.
Yeah. And that's why, see, we're at the point, James, these two different worlds cannot exist side by side any longer. One of them now has to move into the dominant role. And when I saw, there was a town, I don't know if it was in Idaho or where it was, and in front of every store, James, you had white guys with an AR-15. 6, 10 of them, and they would interview them. They'd go up to them and say, well, what are you doing here? Well, we know that they're doing rioting and looting, and we've heard that they're sending it to our town. And so we're going to stand in front of all of our businesses with our guns to let them know, no, you're not doing that here. There was a scene of a shopping mall front, and a whole bunch of Antifa started running for this mall to obviously do what they're going to do, get themselves some new sneakers and some TVs and destroy everything on the way out the door. And there were guys in the upper parapets of the mall, and they started shooting their guns, not at people, into the ground or up in the air. And that whole crowd of Antifa, boom, turned right around and ran the other direction, you know. And then they came back. They shot the guns again. Boom. That whole crowd of Antifa ran away. And the same thing in that small town. Antifa shows up and says, okay, we've already lost this battle. We're not going up against these guys because they know what to do with their weapons, and we don't. Okay.
Koreans knew too, because in the wake of the Rodney King verdict, so you know, there was so much destruction, and their stores and businesses were starting to be impacted. They got up on the rooftops, and they started patrolling in front of their stores and businesses. F you guys. It's like, you know, you have to get through us, and we're armed, and it's not going to end well for you. That was the message then, and that's the message now, that what you're talking about.
It is. And so this is why they have to win. This purge has to succeed. The coup of taking control of the White House, it must occur. Why? Because their whole anti-gun agenda is now burnt. It's toast, because all of the people in this country, the conservatives, the Christians, now realize if they did not have their weapons, their town would have been burnt to the ground. Now try and take away their guns. Not going to happen in a million years.
Yes, and I'll leave this the listeners and viewers with this point before we take a break and go to the second segment. You made some points earlier, Neil, critically important points about how your friends of a like mind are reporting to you. Yeah, it's like my family and friends, they may not have been on board with some of the things or even a few of the things I was saying before, but now they're asking me questions because they're seeing things that just, there's a resonance to discord and evil. And for those that still have that internal meter, it's like pinging way over into the red that there's something wrong here, right? All yes. these restrictions and everything else. And then, and so what's happening also is, and I've always said that when people start to get impacted directly, when it's their families, when it's their bank accounts, when it's their businesses that get impacted, then it becomes personal. We saw in the wake of the 2008 derivatives meltdown that in America, they call them 501ks. In Australia, they call it superannuation. But in America, I knew people that lost thousands of dollars in their 501ks. And here in this latest coronavirus thing, I know people that have lost thousands, tens of thousands of dollars in their superannuation, which is supposed to be the retirement fund. So the people are already being impacted in the pocketbook, right? And what's happening also is people's businesses are being impacted. So I saw a video. One of the webs, one of the YouTube channels that I go to is this ex-Marine Raider, before that ex-Marine Force Recon, right? Marine Special Operations Command. And he's been raided multiple times by the North Carolina cops because he's open for business and he's letting people in and working out in his gym. He's enforcing social distancing in his gym. That's not good enough. They keep coming around, they keep harassing him. And he's been giving vlogs, you know, video commentaries about this whole process. And he's saying straight up, you know, the incidence of infection, the incidence of mortality of this thing is so ridiculously low. Why is this going on? And the point of relevance, folks, is that's just one ex-U.S. Marine Special Operations guy. He's got a lot of friends. And friends have friends. And it's going to get to the point where some of these people, and I had Masaki Miyagawa on the show recently, and he was talking about it's the good old boys in America that are never going to go down. And yes, a lot of them are white, but the thing about it is these people have grown up in the woods, they've grown up fishing, they know field craft, they know weapons, they've served in the military, they've had combat experience. And there are a lot of them, a lot of them. And they have attrition factored into the casualties for the police that'll be working to enforce, the military that's working to enforce. Eventually, they've already got waiting in the wings, mass robotics, AI, Internet of Things to roll out. Also, if it comes to that, right? So the point of relevance, Neil, is it's the Americans are not going to go down without a fight. It's and if they could not subdue the Taliban in all this time, if they could not subdue the North Vietnamese in all this time, all the years that they were in Southeast Asia, they'll never subdue the American people. And one last thought, and I promise it's my last thought. when you look at, I'm sorry, when I talk to a buddy like Neil, it's like usually I'm just very attentive and I let people talk. You know, I play the role of the, you know, the patient interviewer, right? But it just, Neil brings up all these points and so we just really get into it.
With us, it's always a conversation.
It's always a conversation.
I want it to be that way. I want it to be
now,
like friends sitting down at the table getting caught up, you know?
That's it. That's it. And see, folks, the communists always eat their own. Always. That's why they call them useful idiots. They're not their own. They're useful idiots. Alexander Orlov, the KGB master spy, it's like he looted the gold reserves of Spain, and then he wiped out the local Spanish Communist Party, wiped them out, man, woman, and child. You know why? They didn't need him anymore. Tet Offensive, Vietnam. Viet Cong rises up all over South Vietnam. Up to then, they only fought hit and run, true guerrilla-style tactics. Only ones that ever messed with them were the ones who owned the night, like Navy SEALs and certain special operations group guys going around, Marine recon guys looking for trouble, right? But usually Charlie owned the night. What happens through orders from the north, orders from the communist hierarchy, the Viet Cong rise up all over South Vietnam and they get smashed militarily. So when Saigon falls and the North Vietnamese roll in, well, there's no more local communists anymore. They were all wiped out in Tet. So they no longer have a say in the matter. So the point I'm making, folks, is, you know, a lot of these big shot, tough guy, Antifa and communist social justice warriors, this system will eat them. It'll eat them alive. I guarantee it. And I have no sympathy for them because they're trying to drag us down into the dungeon with them. Anyhow, folks, we've had a lively and interesting discussion with my old buddy, Neil Cruz. Neil, please give your website information if anyone wants to contact you. How can they do it?
The website for the radio show is neilshow.com. And Neil is spelled N-E-A-L instead of N-E-I-L. So it's neilshow.com. You can listen to past shows by clicking on, there's on the menu, there's a past shows button. And I have at least the last four shows so that you can stream them. And if you want to email me, it would be at neil@neilshow.com is where you could email me. That's the email system for the radio show. And just a slight bit hesitation warning. I am, James, currently finding it impossible to respond to all the emails and the phone calls, which has bothered me greatly, but I've just given up.
I feel the same way. I'm really disappointed. It's so hard to get back connect with people these days.
But, you know, I try to, people who contribute to my show or who support the show financially, I say, you're first. You guys want to connect. You guys want to email. I'm going to respond to you first. And if I can't get to somebody, it'll be somebody who's just got a general question. But I really try to. And I particularly look for the emails, James, where somebody is struggling emotionally or really, do you know what I'm saying? In that place of, I don't know whether to believe you guys or not, but I'm really afraid. And my friends tell me I shouldn't be listening to you, but I think it's true. You know, when they're right in that cusp area, that's when I really want to be there to listen. If nothing else, to say, I understand, and you can talk to me, so that they feel that they have a friend. It gets pretty rough on them, you know, when they don't know that. So, what else? Let's see. I got my email address, my website. I think that's it, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. And it's the bane of all podcasters, of all researchers, of all investigators is, there's just not enough time in a day to get back with everybody. I mean, when I first started out, Neil, it was a matter of pride to respond to somebody within a day and write a detailed email, but it just, so many things go on and so many things happening at one go. Like yourself, I look for almost the plaintive cry of help. That's kind of like what I look for, or someone, or like you said, someone who's, you know, making a material contribution, making an effort to, you know, contribute to this whole effort. Anyhow, we've reached the end of an engaging and interesting session with an old buddy, Neil Cruz. You've been watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard show. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.